All right, are we ready?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, everybody, it's Movie the Podcast. It's a real buddies episode because Gogs is
Real
staying late
buddies.
on the last,
His last
last day
day
of
of
his
work.
job. But anyway, yeah, it's a real buddies episodes. Your buddies, Alec, Sean, and TJ. And we watched a movie that we've watched the sequels to, but never the that yeah. haven't we haven't watched the original. We watched Walter Hill's Undisputed, the Ving Rhames.
Oh,
Wesley
can I pause
Snipes.
You real quick?
Please.
I want to know why I saw this movie once, like 10 years ago. And I remember when whoever brought up this movie, and I was like, oh yeah, George the Iceman Chambers. Why do I remember that? Like, why
no
is
idea.
That in my head?
I don't know. I love it, though.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so we watched...
Walter Hill's, he's a heck of a director.
That's what
Hell
me and
yeah.
Sean were saying. I had no idea he directed that.
No. He's also, like, credited in Alien ad infinitum.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he helped them write the original treatment
For
Alien.
Yeah. Wasn't that, like, Dan O'Bannon or something?
Yeah, Dan O'Bannon and, like, Schuster or something. But the other guy that co-wrote this movie also has a producer credit on all the Alien movies, so he must have helped.
That's interesting. But yeah,
the fact
when
that it
I
took two people to write 9 lines of dialogue is fucking fascinating, but go on.
You know what I was saying? When I... What's that, Alec?
Sorry, nothing.
Oh. When his name came up, I was like, holy shit, Walter Hill directed this? And then I did the thing I always do where I confuse Walter Hill with Joe Dante, which is a staple on the show.
That's insane, yeah.
I don't know why, dude. I do it every time. I don't know why I get Walter Hill and Joe Dante confused. I was like, Walter Hill, he directed Gremlins 2. I was like, no, that's fucking Joe Dante. Anyway, I'm interested to talk about this movie. I much like last week's show, this to me felt like a relic of a bygone era, and I don't know, I had a lot of fun with it. Like I really, anytime we can watch Wesley Snipes on the show is good. Like I know, like, Wesley Snipes is a very big actor and was a big actor all through the 90s, but like part of me feels like he should have been a bigger actor.
Bro, he's never, well, he's too dark, but like for Hollywood, not for me, but
sure, of course.
He's, I don't recall him ever being bad in anything. I've never
he's
been like,
so
oh,
good.
Wesley Snipes
yeah.
sucks in this. Like the
I
movies
was,
he's been in have sucked.
I was
like,
as I was watching this, I was like, you know what Wesley Snipes needs? He needs his fucking like A24 movie. Somebody
he needs a sad old man movie.
Yes. Like the Safdies need to put him in a movie or something.
Yeah.
Like, I need a Wesley Snipes like dead ass serious Wesley Snipes movie, because like he's great in everything. Like we've done a couple of Wesley Snipes movies on the show, but I mean in the Dolomite movie he's great, and like everything we see him in he's really good.
He's even good in Money Train, and that movie's terrible.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, he was doing everything he could for that movie. This movie he does like a weird voice thing, which is fun.
Yeah,
like,
I don't get if anybody can place that accent, because it is impenetrable.
It is a weird, he's doing his Forrest Whitaker just weird ass accent out of nowhere. But anyway,
so yeah, he's dressed up like Andy Dufresne.
Yes, he is, 100%. I want to say this is pre Shawshank Redemption. Is that right? When did that come out? Anyway, let's get into what we watched this week before we get into Undisputed.
Alec, I watched more than three things. But I got three things written down, so we're talking about them.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Finally got my viewing in of A Muppet Christmas Carol.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Classic.
My greatest, tiny broken body.
One of the greatest movies of all time.
Agreed.
Gogs and I and our wives went to the Hippodrome, the Meyerhoff.
The BSO, right?
Yeah, because they did a screening of Love Actually where the orchestra played the music.
Oh, that's neat.
It was neat. It was
I
fun.
I like that movie.
And they had the subtitles on, and there are like a bunch of lines in it that I had never even realized were jokes before and stuff. But it was a lot of fun, and people were into it. People were loving it and like...
Actually.
Yeah, actually loving it. Stacey's shaking her head. She didn't like that one.
Oh.
I
liked it. I'm just eating chips.
The third thing I watched was, it's a, I believe, a Netflix original starring Chad Michael Murray and a bunch of other, oh, Michael Gross is in it.
From Tremors? From Family Ties, that guy?
Yep. That guy, he's in it. It's called The Merry Gentlemen. Hmm. And it's about a Christmas-themed adult male review that a bar puts on to try to save the bar from going bankrupt.
Is it saved by other men coming to view that? Because I feel like that would be the target audience.
Nope.
Oh.
Not at all.
Boo. Boo.
It's something. It's a movie.
Who is Chad Michael Murray? Like, I know I've heard the name, but like, what's he from?
He was, his big thing was One Tree Hill, which I never watched, but he's been in like, literally like hundreds of like Hallmark movies and stuff like that. Like he's been in I went back through his IMDb every year for the past like 9 years. He's done at least one like Hallmark Christmas movie. And that's kind of what he does now. Mm. I guess keeps him working. Good for him.
Yeah, get the bag.
Hell yeah. I think that's all that I watched. I'm sure I watched something else, but I was really high on Saturday night, so I
might have
just
forgotten.
All right.
Oh, cool. We watched The Holiday, most of The Holiday, starring Jack Black and Cameron Diaz and
bless you, I think.
Kate Winslet and Jude Law.
How was that?
It's fine.
So they took two of our worst actors and put them up against two of England's best actors. I don't like that arrangement.
Yeah, so you paired off Cameron Diaz with Jude Law and Jack Black with Kate Winslet.
Mm.
I only watched it because I remember it being Christmas being a big part of it. Thought it was a Christmas movie, but it just happens to take place at Christmas. Christmas is not consequential to the movie at all. So
it's like, since, I come in peace.
I've since removed it from the Christmas list. Banished it.
I'm taking the holiday off Mount Lushmore.
Banished it to hell. That is all that I watched. TJ.
Nice. TJ is me, Jay. I kind of laugh. I watched one thing. Sean brought it up a couple weeks ago. I watched Dinner in America.
Hell yeah.
And I loved it. I thought it was fucking brilliant. I said this to Sean, but like it felt to me like tonally like a lot like Ghost World, because it's just about like two fucking social misfits kind of finding each other.
Yeah, I think, and I said Ghost World meets Welcome to the Dollhouse meets SLC Punk was my like pitch.
But it also feels just like, again, to say it again, it feels like a throwback to like those early 2000s kind of indie movies. But it's really funny. And it's a period piece. They never exactly say what year it is, but it's somewhere in the 90s because nobody has cell phones. They have regular antenna TVs, and they use the R slur constantly, which I always appreciate. Yeah. And you can tell I appreciate it because I don't even say it on the show for fear of being canceled. But I thought it was great. It's got Kyle Gallner, who is quickly Gallner. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's quickly becoming like one of my favorite actors. Like the guy
that's
is just
fucking awesome.
I mean, he was great in Strange Darling. He was great in this. He was great in The Fucking Passenger. Like that guy is
Jennifer's fucking Body.
He was in that somehow. He was terrible. And the Nightmare on Elm Street remake. He was terrible in that.
Oh yeah.
But he's like really come around. Like I thought he was so good in this. And like Sean said, this movie is at its core, it's also about like kind of punk rock. But in a weird way, it's also about how punk rock is kind of bullshit. Cause you find out like the main guy, he's kind of cosplaying as like a revolutionary, which is kind of cute and very realistic to the scene. Like, I don't know. Yep. I loved it. I thought it was funny. I thought it was like really fresh and clever. And I have to be honest, I was a little worried. Like in the first 5 minutes, like the dialogue is very abrasive, and I was like, oh god, is this whole movie gonna be like a
cursing movie?
Yeah, and it's like, it's how they curse, you know what I mean? It's just like,
fucking shit, cunt, fuck liquor, like that. Yeah,
and I'm like, oh no. But no, it really does like mellow out. Well, they turn it down a notch. That's a joke for the movie. But I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it's one of those rare comedies where like it's like legitimately very funny, but it's also like very heartfelt and like in a weird way. Because again, it's, I don't know, I can always relate to just being like a fucking social misfit outcast.
Yeah.
Like, and I don't know, it's like very sweet at the end of the day. Like,
yeah,
at first, like the romance between the two lead characters, you're like, where is this ever going? And it, like, by the end of it, it's like, oh, it's like kind of sweet and kind of endearing. Yeah. And I don't know. It was a very wild ride, but I loved it. I loved it. It's a movie that I'm going to be recommending to people. Like, this is a movie that I could easily recommend to other people, like, and they'll like it. You know what I mean? Like, this is just weird enough for me, but just not so weird that like normies aren't going to like it. I really, really enjoyed it. Also, I don't know who made the primary song in the two main characters.
One that he records with her. Yeah.
That song is great. I love that fucking song. I don't know who did that song. And I've actually heard that song on like some TikToks. So like, I don't know if people have seen the movie and then put it on the TikTok. Like, I don't know if that's some actual band that did the song, but I love the song. And even though you only see her for a few seconds, but the punk band that the Kyle Gallner is in,
Psyop,
yeah. They have a song called Dinner in America. That's the title of the movie. Yeah. And that song is cool too, and it feels very authentic. I don't know, but I loved it. It's a 9 out of 10 for me. I thought it was fantastic. I like I said, I will be recommending that to a lot of people, like if they're looking for something to watch. I have Pat Healy is in it, and I love Pat Healy. And I without looking at his entire filmography, if Pat Healy shows up in a movie, I'm probably gonna like it. He's also in Ghost World. He's also in Cheap Thrills, which is a movie that I fucking love to death. He's wonderful. So great movie. A strong, strong recommend for me. But that's all I watched. Sean?
I didn't watch shit. The Gilmore Girls has been on at my house. I haven't been watching it, but I lift my head up occasionally. That shit fucking sucks. And it's like way overwritten to the point where like 16-year-olds are constantly making like references to Kafka and shit. And it's like, they're not even those type of 16-year-olds. It's just, it's bad. That's hilarious. Very, very bad.
The only thing I know about Gilmore Girls is like it's about two sisters, right?
No, it's about a mother and a daughter, but the mother had the kid when she was 16.
Oh, I guess having never watched it, I just thought they were sisters. But the daughter, I guess, she was in Sin City. She was like,
yeah, she was the blue-eyed hooker, right?
Yeah, she was the one that like ratted them all out at the end. Yeah,
she was the Altoona McDonald's worker of Sin City.
Fucking class traitors! What the fuck?
Yeah,
come and get my free my boy.
They got our beautiful angel.
I know, Towson, Maryland guy.
Hell yeah! The only good thing to ever come out of Towson. Well, him and Dave Meggett, I guess.
Dave Meggett went to Towson.
Yeah, Dave Meggett went to Towson University, sir.
Shit, I didn't know that. That's pretty cool. Anyway, all right. Well, I guess we can get into our feature presentation. Undisputed. Goggs isn't here, so we're not going to do like a proper synopsis. Because we're all bad at it.
I don't know how he does it.
I don't know either.
There's not really much to cover.
I guess I could go through the plot summary on IMDb.
If it takes you more than 3 minutes,
I Googled Undisputed and the fucking Skip Bayless show came up. I don't know why I'm surprised.
Read the plot summary for that instead.
We all let it be known that the movie, the podcast, hates Skip Bayless.
We're all anti Skip Bayless as a unit.
I mean,
four gongs.
Colin Cowherd, all those old white men who never played any sports.
The best was when he was telling Shannon Sharp that he sucked. And it's like, bro, he's got like two Super Bowl rings and he's in the Hall of Fame.
And he's infinitely more entertaining than fucking Skip Bayless. Oh,
he's hilarious.
The best out of any of those guys is Dan Orlovsky, because every time he comments on anything, people just post him running out of the end zone for a safety, like, over and
I
over.
Forget. They had Calvin Johnson was on some show. You know how every player has a show now, right?
Yeah.
And they had him as like, is Dan Orlovsky the reason why you guys went 0-16? And then he's cut to Calvin Johnson. He goes, well, it didn't help. That's the funniest shit.
I miss is Tim Rome still alive? I miss him.
Jim Rome, yeah.
Jim Rome.
He just does radio, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I don't think he does it.
Yeah, I think he's
that dude was like the worst radio guy ever because he'd just go in these long ass pauses and I thought my radio broke. He'd be like,
oh,
so.
He sucked.
And you'd be like, is he going to say something? And like, I don't know how that guy was ever like successful on the radio. It just,
he feels like, I know he was in movies, but he feels like the fake, like pundit in like Any Given Sunday. Like he doesn't feel like a real person.
Also,
TJ will understand this reference. You know, he reminds me of a famous version of Kevin Damiano.
Bless up or fuck that guy, whichever way you guys.
He's our friend-ish who went to Penn State on a baseball scholarship, and then came back and for fall break, and we were all playing football, and he wanted to play, but said nobody can touch me because I'm on scholarship. We proceeded to pound the absolute shit out of him.
Yeah, and then he went back to Penn State and got the shit pounded out of him. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Jerry Sandusky didn't coach baseball.
He made an exception to that guy.
He might have wandered over there. You never know.
He was just doing strength and conditioning of his asshole.
Speaking of ESPN sports guys, who is the guy that's interviewing Ving Rhames in the
Jim
movie?
Lampley. He was HBO boxing.
I could not pick. I knew his face from somewhere. All right, anyway, without any further ado, let me go through the plot summary on Wikipedia. Because we don't support IMDb anymore because their website is just a nightmare to navigate.
I can't even figure out how to like look up people's casting credits anymore.
It's the worst. I don't know why they changed it. It's so bad. Anyway.
Do you use the app or do you go to the actual like, mobile site?
I go to the website.
I use the app. The app's pretty intuitive, I feel like.
I'm talking about the app, like the website on like a desktop computer. It's bad. It's really bad.
Oh. Is this as bad as the Newsarama website?
Oh God, is that still a thing? Is that?
I don't think so, but that site was fucking awful.
Oh God, I used to know like basically everybody that ran that site. That was a long time ago in a different life.
Losers.
So the plot is heavyweight boxing champion George the Iceman Chambers is convicted of rape and is sentenced to 6 to 8 years at Sweetwater, a new prison in the Mojave Desert. The high security facility is populated with hardened criminals. Well, it's a jail.
Better if it's softened criminals.
Unaware of the prison's ways.
Prison for fancy boys.
Unaware of the prison's ways and its unique hierarchy, the pompous and bratty, adjectives there. The pompous and bratty Chambers. The pompous and bratty Chambers.
Bratty?
Yeah, what the fuck is that? Tries to impress upon the inmates his status as a champion boxer. The prison camp has a competition on which a betting syndicate thrives. Criminals fight in matches with very lax rules, thus making it very addictive and lucrative. A very lucrative venture for the syndicate. The most popular boxer
did fucking
behind
George
bars.
Plimpton write this?
Way too long. Also, like, way too much background. The most popular boxer behind bars is Sweetwater's soft-spoken, humbled, undefeated Monroe Undisputed Hutchins,
His nickname is not Undisputed.
I'm just reading.
He's humble, a good boy who knows his place. Who wrote this?
Good Lord.
It's like the people who think Link's name is Zelda.
Also, I still can't get over Ving Rhames being bratty. Like, bratty. I'm just imagining him being, like, sassy.
Ving Rhames is the very powerful and cunty George the Iceman Chambers.
Who ends up in solitary confinement after Chambers picks a fight with him in the mess hall. Flashbacks to Hutchins' own boxing career.
The mess hall, because they're in the military now. They're on a boat. It's just the cafeteria.
Flashbacks to Hutchins' own boxing career shows that he has been sentenced to life without the possibility of parole for beating a man to death who was sleeping with his girlfriend. More on that later. And this movie is crazy misogynistic. Sensing the brewing hatred for the heavyweight champion, an incarcerated mob boss named Ripstein, who I swear to God, every time they said it, I thought his name was Epstein.
They got a bunch of girls on the island there. I don't know if this tracks, but I texted to TJ Alec. I said Kevin Falk reminded me of Kelvin Pollock doing Kevin Falk, and that's all I can think of.
Kevin Falk. You mean Peter running Falk. Back Kevin
Peter
Falk.
I'm sorry. You know who I'm sorry.
Well, I know.
That's a mess
second,
up only like
the second Patriots running back to reference. It's like 20 minutes.
I bring up Corey Dillon recently.
Yeah, let's talk about Stephen Ridley.
Oh, shit.
Or the law firm, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis.
Oh, yeah, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis. Shout out.
Wonder all if right, TJ.
Oh, I don't care. Where was I? Sensing the brewing hatred for the heavyweight champion. Oh, I already said this. Epstein senses potential in a match between Hutchins and Chambers. Ripstein, a lifelong boxing fan. That's not what he was. He was like a fucking, he was like a fixer. At least that's what I understood.
But he was also a fan of the Sweet Science and the Shores of Fistiana or whatever the fuck.
Yeah. You know, boxing. Lucius Sweets, he's just as rich and as famous as Don King, and he looks just like him. Proposes
but Chambers
match.
Is a fustigator.
Fustigation aside, Mo. That's a great episode. Proposes a match, and Warden Lipscomb is persuaded to look the other way. As the arrangements are finally organized, an eagerly awaited fight night arrives. Chambers knocks down Hutchins twice, and with the London Prize ring rules, each knockdown counts as the end of the round, as the boxer is given only 60 seconds to get up. In the third round, Hutchins charges back, and knocks Chambers down for the first time in his career, sending the crowd of prisoners into a frenzy. Finally, in the fourth round, Hutchins officially KOs Chambers to become the undisputed champion. Tell me this isn't weird. Ripstein's Mexican assistant revealed. Why is this important in this?
Well, it's not like he has 30 different assistants of all different ethnicities. He just has the one.
I want to talk to whoever wrote this.
Yeah, the guy's he's a little problematic.
Right? Ripstein's Mexican assistant revealed in a narrator voice, odd, that Ripstein died 3 weeks after the fight, but in his will, he left him $2 million. Chambers was released on parole, and Hutchins received the money for his sister, who was experiencing hardship. Excuse me.
My sister's retarded. She's got kids, but no job. She can't drive. She can't read. She don't know nothing.
It was also revealed that Chambers and his manager denied the fight with Hutchins ever occurred, and that was all rumor. Months later, Chambers wins back the heavyweight champion of the world. The whole cell block watches the televised fight and laugh and cheer. Monroe's name after hearing Chambers being crowned the undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
Okay. Alec, TJ texted me at some point, and I was like, I had the same thought that Mitchell Undisputed Monroe, or whatever Wesley Snipes' name is supposed to be, is the lineal heavyweight champion of the world. Yes,
he's 100% the liminal champion.
The super liminal champion.
Are you not familiar with the liminal
lineal
championship?
The lineal.
Oh,
the lineal.
I said it wrong. Yeah, the lineal heavyweight champion.
I have a question before we get too far into this. If Peter Falk has enough stroke with this parole board to get literally the most famous prisoner on earth out of prison with no questions asked, why is he himself still in prison?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. Also, like, his mob.
Does he just like it?
Really,
I gotta be here with my Mexican assistant.
At one point, they're gonna pay him so to make Ving Rhames take a dive, and he's like, "You don't understand it. Like, he loves the boxing or whatever." And it's like, what is going on?
The amount of time, the longest section of the movie is the discussion of the rules of said bout, which, first of all, is just insane. And Peter Falk is adamant that they bare knuckle fight each other until one person says one time it will be a better fight if they wear gloves, and he goes, "You know what? You're right. Just scrap." Why do we sit through the other 40 minutes of the fucking?
Yeah, that could have definitely. I mean, the movie's already pretty short, but that could be cut down. I want to talk about another moment in the movie that I really loved because of the way that the lack of an edit really makes this seem very strange. There's a part where one of the like prison gangs in the prison is trying to make good with Ving Rhames, so they send over ladyboy. Yeah, they sent over a prison bitch. Yeah,
they pause real quick. This guy gives the worst performance in cinema history. I don't know why they picked him or how he auditioned or what happened, but he is literally the worst actor on earth.
Actually, like, I think it's in the
also Ving Rhames' line. You're kind of pretty for a bitch.
This is psychotic. This is the part I was going to talk about. So he says that, and then the prison bitch is like, "It's best not to turn away a gift from the gang or whatever."
The vague Nation of Islam.
Right. But they cut back to Ving Rhames, and it holds on him for so long. I'm like, are they going to cut to them fucking? Because it holds on him for so long. I was like, this movie is going to be fucking wild if it cuts to Ving Rhames fucking this dude.
You're kind of pretty for a bitch. First of all, no, he is not. Let's just get that on front street.
I thought that Tracy Morgan being the prison bitch in The Longest Yard was more believable than this guy.
Second of all, being pretty, I think, is like the number one bitch criterion in prison. Like, that should be at the top of the list.
I don't know what made me think of this. There was a pretty good HBO miniseries called The Night Of. What's his name is in it? The Sound of Metal guy. I can't think of his name off the top of my head now.
Riz Ahmed.
Riz Ahmed was in it. And it's a great show. But like, he goes into prison. Like, he's wrongfully accused and he goes into prison. But he turns into like a fucking like hardened prisoner like overnight. And there's a funny scene where like he's like, I'll never do that for another man. And like they literally cut and he's like sucking somebody's dick. And it's like, well, that didn't take long. Yeah, I mean,
we've all had that conversation with God at like 3:30 in the morning. Can we talk about, so Wesley Snipes beats up Ving Rhames in jail, or mm-hmm. they get in a fight. And he is sent to solitary pending a transfer that never happens. I don't know why we're fucking around with this. They cut back to him. He has made, because he needs you to understand that he is the biggest weeb on earth. And I feel like he brought this from home. A like pagoda temple out of matchsticks that is roughly like 3/4 scale. Like he has like 3 matchsticks, and then they cut back and it is completely built. It's like that scene in Hot Rod where he like goes in the room and then enters the room again and there's an engine hoist in there.
Bro, I think you hit the nail right on the head. This is something that Wesley Snipes like made in his trailer. Like he had to have it in there. Like, he's a very quirky guy. It's a very weird
scene. He loves Japan. Loves it.
I like that.
Go ahead.
I'll tell you my favorite part.
Well, hold on. Can I ask first? Okay. Sorry. Because it'll lead into what this is a non-structured, this is, you know, chaos since Goggs is in here. Was your favorite part of the movie the rampant misogyny in this film?
No, that was awful. My favorite part was that Ving Rhames immediately cured racism as soon as he showed up in the prison. Because the blacks, the whites, the Aryans, the Hispanic, like everybody, all joined together
to
defeat Ving Rhames.
That is true.
That scene where this neo-Nazi gets up and it gives his, like, I am Spartacus, whatever that was awful. Like, hysterically awful. You thought you was a god, but you was a dog. I'm like, yeah, and we got the real Monroe Chambers, or whatever is that, Wesley Snipes. That guy is going to be super dead tomorrow, by the way, because 100%. I don't think the Aryan Brotherhood is going to allow you to stand up and praise like your beautiful Black Emperor in front of the entire prison.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty fucking wild.
Can we talk about whether or not Iceman Chambers actually raped that woman?
I wanted to get into that. This is the biggest problem with the fucking movie, and like, it's gonna knock up at least a point off because it was very hard to overlook it, and that kept going back to it. Like, obviously, I mean,
it's meant to be evocative of like Tyson, right? Like, this is the reference.
Okay, but here's the thing, right? And we're all, you know, we all remember that time.
We all
heard the same bullshit back then, and it's like, it's stuff I've heard all my life, but now, like, I don't know, I'm not a fucking idiot anymore, and I understand, like, consent, but, like, you know, how many times did you hear, well, she went to his room, like, what did she expect? And that is, like, awful. Like, I'm not, you know what I mean? Like, that is just, it's terrible, but, like, this movie drips in it, because that's what
it's weird, right? Because they kind of, he expresses that viewpoint, like, she wasn't doing nothing but make it. After he says, I'm a big black motherfucker, I'm like, well, he's not wrong. He's giving his Ving Rhamesiest performance, but he's good, like, basically, movie, like, yeah, she wanted it, but there's never, like, a counter to that, you know what I mean? There's never, like, a framing that, like, oh, that's wrong. Like, you should not say that. That is not a good thing for a person to say or do. Well,
yeah, not only that.
To the point where they sawshoe it so much, it's like, did he actually do it? Like, I don't know.
That's just it, because it's so confusing, because not only they keep going back to the victim and, like, her, like, after the fact. Like, they don't just show her once. They show her several times in the film. So it's like, is there something else that they cut out of the movie? Like, Sean, you and I talked about it before we started recording, but it just seems like you're right to not have that counterbalance, because it just seems really bad. Like, it just seems like very, like, even for the time, it's pretty fucking rough. You know what I mean?
Well, did you, like, I've seen this movie before, but, like, the framing of the flashback with Wesley Snipes, more misogyny problems, and even for, like, I don't remember when this came out, but I feel like even then it would be like, I don't know if this is great. But I thought he killed the guy in the ring is the way it was framed, but that's not what happened at all. No. Yeah.
No, and even though I guess the Wesley Snipes thing isn't as bad, it's still, I went to jail because of this bitch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this lying woman sent me to jail. And it's like, I mean, it was the fucking 90s, but, like, goddamn.
Also, can we talk about Walter Hill's, like, fucking fascination with After Effects and shit? Like, it made me think of his cut of the Warriors, where he put all that shit back in it that nobody likes.
It's fucking rough.
God, but it was like supposed to be like the camera flashes between rounds, like every cut. It was so bad.
Well, yeah, it was that rough. And it's the you know Cheggy Gonzalez, Mexican assistant here for arson. Which, okay, fine, that's what we're doing. But then 2 seconds later, it's like, what are you in for? Oh, for arson. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, one of those two things is not necessary. I get the dialogue is necessary because the movie's already short as shit. You got to get to 90 minutes.
I really didn't need all those, like, I mean, I didn't need all those,
you don't,
like,
gain anything
cut,
from
cut
it.
To black, and it's like, this guy's a fucking arson, this guy's a fucking rape. Also,
you know,
like,
you know what we did need more of? The Gat Boys.
Oh, is that the rappers? The prison
Master
rappers?
Master P, Silk the Shocker.
Yeah. Hold on.
Yeah, that was
one of those
Master
guys
P,
was
bro.
Master P?
Yes.
I didn't catch that. No shit.
Yeah, it was the No Limit Soldiers. They were everywhere. Their ass was everywhere.
I know I know those two. I don't know C Murder or Boz.
Yep, C Murder is also
the Gat Boys.
Alec, I don't want to alarm you, but C Murder went to prison for something. Do you want to guess what it was?
embezzling funds. Ed Lover. I didn't realize Ed Lover was the ring announcer. I always thought Ed Lover was a lot bigger. Dude,
Ed Lover is for sure trying to get, I don't know if this is his fetch or whatever, but he's like, brother scumbags. It's like, it's not working, bro. Stop. And he just keeps going back to it.
Yeah. I was telling Sean, like, this movie is, like, wild because in the first five. You all right?
Yeah, it blew my nose.
Oh, I thought it was another fart, which would have been funnier. But, no, this movie is wild because, like, you get Peter Falk, Michael Rooker, Ed Lover, fucking Wesley, like all these people are dropped like right
Fisher
away.
Fisher Stevens.
Fisher Stevens. How did I forget Fisher Stevens?
Ratbag.
Then you see a fucking like a giant Nazi, and it just says rape. His name is just, it's like, what is going on?
Fisher Stevens, who's ostensibly Wesley Snipes' manager for these bouts that they are only allowed to have biannually for some reason. Also, why does he need a manager? Like, are they negotiating anything? Like,
yeah, it's hard to say.
He's, well, that's the thing, right? I think me and TJ talked about this briefly offline. Every other prison movie, Fisher Stevens' character gets killed. He's the caretaker from The Longest Yard or whomever, the Red. You know what I'm saying? Like, there is no side plot to anything that happens besides, like, cutting back to the woman getting interviewed about her sexual assault. Like, there is no trickery. There's no, like, it's all just straight ahead to the fight. Like, the movie, this should be Rocky IV. It should just be nothing but training montages and then the fight.
Yeah, I mean, they really only worry about the fight. It's kind of, I thought that was its, like, strongest point. Like, it really didn't, there's not a lot of fat.
The fight looks good.
The fight does look good. I tell you, my least favorite parts of the actual fight was when, and I mean, I know why you do this, so you do this for establishing shots, but I hated when you saw it from outside, like, from, like, crowd's perspective, because it just looked bad.
Like, also,
it's like the steel cage matches in WWE.
Oh, it's fucking worse, like, dude.
You can't see shit because the camera's outside the bars.
And the prison houses roughly 2 million people. It is like the biggest prison. It's like the fucking hell dimension from Jet Li's The One.
Well, and according to IMDb, or according to Wikipedia, it holds dangerous criminals. Hardened criminals. That's right. But, I don't know. I mean, what else? Is there anything else we need to get into? I mean, we got one of the major points.
The guy who played Ving Rhames' Native American sidekick also played the Sphinx in Mystery Men.
Oh, no shit. I've recognized that guy. Like,
he's been in a lot.
It's the guy who's not Wes Studi. He's the other guy.
Yeah. This is Wes Studi.
Oh, it is Wes Studi?
Oh, yeah. Fuck.
Oh, God, this is Baby Boy all over again.
Oh, my God. Could we edit this part out?
No, fuck it, leave it in. There's only six of them left anyway. What are they going to do?
He's in Hostels.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That movie rocks.
Oh, that movie rocks.
And TJ pointed out, Alec, you probably would know this, that Ving Rhames' manager is from Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't recognize that. I did not notice that.
You remember that episode, Alec, where they were going to that guy to hold signs out on the street?
Yeah.
He's the guy that's like, this guy doesn't have the sign holder's mentality, but this guy's got potential. That's that guy. It's his manager.
I didn't even recognize.
Yeah. But all right, I guess it's Five Knuckle Shuffle time. I'm sorry, I got a important text from our webmaster, so the whole website might be changing here soon. So,
oh,
is it about how?
Stay tuned to that.
We're not showing up on Apple anymore.
Yes, but we also, like, I don't know.
Will we get all the lost episodes back?
Probably not, but I don't know. It won't really, if you're listening to this, it's not going to affect you guys. We're just going to have to overhaul the website, but really the website doesn't really matter all that much.
Yeah.
I'm willing to dig in, and I got a shovel.
Oh, there you go. You need a digital shovel.
Oh, don't got that.
Not those digital shovels.
I got a mini chainsaw.
Oh shit! A mini chainsaw.
The fucking mini chainsaw is awesome. I love it. That's fucking badass.
You
hold it in one hand, and just like chainsaw shit.
Awesome. Is it electric or gas?
Yeah, it's got a battery. It's tremendous.
Fuck yeah! Nice.
I'm cutting all kinds of shit out in my backyard. Shit that didn't need to be cut, just cutting it.
Well, you got a chainsaw. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
What's the axe for? I don't know. Chopping stuff. All right, Five Knuckle Shuffle time. You can tell Gogs is in here. Quick episode. We're in and out, baby. We ain't got no time to dilly dally.
Nope, no dallying or dillying.
That's right. Alec.
It's gonna be a 6. Same score as whatever we watched last week that I already forgot.
Alec does not like, like boxing movies.
I love boxing movies. I think boxing movies are the best sports movies. Like the Creeds, the Rockies, The Fighter, even for how much that movie's been like memed to hell and stuff, like that's still a really good movie. That might be what we watch next week, maybe.
Hell yeah.
That's a good one.
But this just the editing choices and some of like it was so bad. Like Sean said, like the Chirons for everybody. And then immediately tell them again what they did. Like
somewhere a young arson, David Ayer was bag. Like, I'm gonna use that one day.
Rat bag, arson. Hey, rat bag, what you in for?
Arson. Yeah, yeah.
You know, champ, you shouldn't ask people what they're in for. It's rude. All right, I'll take it under advisement. Hey, what are you in for?
Yeah. No, I will say though, Ving Rhames hilariously goes, I know it's against the rules, but that shit was hilarious.
I know it's not decorum. Yeah.
Right, you're right, right.
But yeah, I had too many issues with it to give it a better score. Like the fight, the actual boxing was good, but there wasn't enough of it.
Yeah.
Compared to Gat Boys. There was probably more Gat Boy performances than boxing. And also those fades and cuts, just oh my god. Like the dude, he's directed a lot of good stuff. I mean, he has a style, but his style did not translate to this for me. Sean.
It's a 7. I think Walter Hill's one of our great kind of workaday directors. Like he's made some like classic movies, but he's made a lot of shit like this, which is just like a movie, which sometimes that's cool. The After Effects thing is like kind of like getting your dad like a fucking smartwatch and he won't stop fucking with it. And like,
you know, Ted, there are other kinds of wipes besides Star Wipe.
But when you got steak.
It's weird because this movie is billed as Wesley Snipes being the main character, but I think he has 7 lines. So I guess Ving Rhames is the lead in this, I guess. Yeah. Like, you know nothing about Wesley Snipes other than he is the lineal heavyweight champion of the world and he has a sister who is suffering from some kind of catastrophic retardation, I guess. That is it.
That's the name of my new punk band.
Like there's no real graft. They kind of have to yell at the warden once and that's fine. Like it's not like a whole big scandal like every other prison. It's pretty organized. Like people are doing okay. They got their match sticks. There's nobody's learning how to read. There's no like somebody's wife misses. There's nothing. It's just dudes waiting to fight in jail. And I'm good with that. It's not as like insane as the sequels would become. To the point where they're just about like a tertiary character now. But it's, you know, in the and this is going to kind of give away one of my picks, but in the pantheon of prison boxing movies, it's lower tier, but it's a perfectly serviceable movie. It is a movie.
Yeah.
And it's a 7. TJ.
TJ. This is definitely a movie that was on like TBS.
A million
times.
Yeah.
Are either one of you surprised that this movie like warranted like 5 sequels? Like direct to video, but like
Because it's like, you know, you can make a prison fighting movie without the name recognition because I'm just know what I'm saying? Like this is a movie you could tell me that either it had a theatrical release or it went straight to like TNT and I wouldn't be able to argue either way. You know what I mean? It's in that weird kind of mid.
I didn't look at its budget. It wasn't even like a huge hit. It was actually like looking at this barely a hit at all. So 15 to $20 million budget and a $14.9 million box office. So like why did they continue to make these movies? Also, this probably doesn't mean anything to either one of you, but like Stanley Clark made all the music. Stanley Clark's like a famous jazz bass player. That's kind of weird. But anyway.
The TJ Music Minute. Yeah, go ahead, bud.
Sorry. So it's also a 7 for me, dog. I did enjoy it though. It like borders on an 8 because like I do have a lot of fun with this movie. Like It's jankiness. Like, I agree that the after effects and the editing are like really annoying, but like, it's kind of terrible in a fun way. Like, it adds to the like overall kind of weird vibe this movie gives. But I
can't. This is a movie that if we had watched it together, probably would be like an 8 because have been howling 100%. On the floor laughing at the insanity of it.
Agreed. But I also,
I'm a racist, but I, God damn it, I love Wesley Snipes.
I can't give something higher than a 7 that's this fucking overtly misogynistic, because it just hurts. It's very rough.
Yeah, it's real like, bad.
And I know that we watch everything with 2024 eyes and all, but like, even in the 90s,
I don't know, we're pretty, fucking, I think we're pretty forgiving for shit being of its time, but this is like,
it's real bad. And then the fact that they made both of the characters' origin stories tie back to like lying women. It's like,
Walter Hill's I think Walter Hill has a complex.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you didn't have to do that, right? Like Sean said.
Oh, well, that's also the Warriors too. The bitches fuck them over.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I feel like I'd seen this before, but it'd been a long time.
Sorry to interrupt you, but it made me think. Fine. When Alex said that, TJ and I went and saw the Phantom Thread one time, and we get out of the theater, and he looks at me like in all seriousness and goes, "You think Maya Rudolph's okay?"
Yeah, right. Yeah. Great movie. But also, yeah, this dude, I was looking at the guy. So the, no, he's not a writer. This guy produced Demon Knight. Shout out to Demon Knight. I love that fucking movie.
The Good Tales from the Crypt movie.
That movie fucking rules. This guy mainly, the guy that's credited as a writer on this, he wrote basically like nothing else besides this. He like produced like all, he's a producer credit on like every Alien film. I think Sean said that. But anyway, but yeah, I don't know. Like, I like this movie a lot, but man, I wish they kind of wrote around some of that other stuff, because it does really harsh the mellow of me in this movie. Because it's like, it's the Ving Rhames one. His backstory is the fucking worst too. And again, like the confusing nature in which they keep going back to her. So it's like, you think there's going to be some kind of revelation, like, because full disclosure, like it would make more sense to make Ving Rhames more of a villain. Because then you have somebody to root for, but like
you could do it really easily too. Cause you could just be like, yeah, I did it. So what? I'm the champion of the fucking world. I'll take what I want. You know, 2 seconds.
I thought that's where they were going. I thought that's what they were going to do. Because again, like, obviously, like, you don't want that's not great either, but at least it's a clear motivation to make him a villain. Yeah. The way they leave it, like, I know that Ving Rhames is kind of a dick, but like, I mean, but
you could also go completely the other way, because he even does that. You know, I'm a big black motherfucker. You could be like, this is how I'm portrayed. Like, this is what people think of me. You know what I mean? Because of, you could go either way, and they chose to do neither, and the whole thing suffers because of it.
Yeah, and because it doesn't, I don't understand what you're trying to tell me. And then you keep cutting back to this woman and her crying about it. And it's just like, what are you trying to say? Like, I don't understand. Is she lying? Is she not? Like, it just is very muddled and confusing, and I just don't like it. Again, I know what they're doing, like, in a weird way. Like, I understand it's an allusion to the whole Tyson situation, but then that takes, again, like I said before, that takes me to a dark place where I heard a bunch of fucking assholes back in the 90s go, well, you know, she knew what she was in for. It's like, that kind of thinking is fucking disgusting. Or
again, like the other side of like, look at him, he's, you know, this and that, of course he did it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
both are very bad, you know. Yeah. I mean, both are horrendous, but yeah, it's a 7 for me. I did have fun with this movie. I think I wanted to score it higher, but I agree, it's got a little too many problems, but it's fun. All right, next week, whose pick is it?
Well, it's either me or Alec.
You got to fight over it. Queensberry rules or whatever.
Queensberry rules. No, Queensberry. I think Queensberry rules is like regular boxing.
That's the modern rules. Yeah, the Marquis de Queensberry.
What is it? The London Prize rules was the other old, like.
They went deep into Wikipedia for that.
Yeah. Shit, I don't know. I was really just thinking about just picking the original Rocky.
Well, I mean,
we can't pick any Rocky movies.
We can't pick. Yeah, I feel like that might be a little too much.
Well, then Sean,
I got to pick ahead. If you want to think about it.
Pick Rocky 5. Didn't we already do? Oh, we did Penitentiary 3. Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah, I can't wait. God, I hope there's another, like, sex-crazed, like, little person in this. Man, Penitentiary 3 ruled. Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Which one? Is that the one with Dee Cade and the Big Show?
No, that was Vendetta.
Oh, Vendetta.
Penitentiary 3 was that weird-ass movie where that guy got framed for murder. And then there was, like a prison wizard.
It had the diegetic saxophone.
I remember. What was the guy's name?
Guts.
Oh, sweet Sahara.
Oh yeah, that was the white guy.
He was the guy that, like,
yeah, he lived in the Black Lodge.
Yes, and he oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited. And also, I remember Sean saying this when we did the third episode, that the guy that was the main character in the third one gets framed for murder in each of them somehow. Yes.
He keeps going back to prison and winning a tournament to get out.
I cannot wait. I might watch it tonight. I'm certainly not watching the football game. What a terrible game. How'd they not flex out of that? Cowboys, Bengals?
Ugh.
Yeah, that's rough.
All right, boys.
All right, everybody. That's the show. See y'all later. Next week, Penitentiary 2. I like how you went for 2 and not 1.
Yeah, we're working our way up to it.
I like it. All right, that's the show, everybody.
It would be stupid if we watched 3 and then 1.
Fair.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Yeah. All right, everybody. See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, I got to hit the thing.
Yeah, end record. End record.